Hey, hey,
Love
hey.
Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome once again to our show, Diamond in the Rough. I am your ever-present host, Charlie Alejandro, Ordinary Woman, as you all know me. And I'm so excited to have you all here. Kind of a little Halloween kind of thing going on with this music. Some of you know why I chose that as our opening song today, but some of you might not. That's actually called Extraordinary Circumstances, which, hey, can't beat a title that has extraordinary in it. But actually, that is the theme song to one of the web series that is created by the mad genius, as I like to call him, Seth Chidwick, and he's going to be a guest on our show in a few minutes. So we're going to get to talk to him and some of the creative minds and talents behind Angelwood Films. I'm so excited for this opportunity to finally get them all on the show, because he has an incredible, incredible group of people around him, talent-wise and personality-wise, and just a fun, nice crew to work with. So I'm really excited that we're going to have them on in the show in a few minutes. And in the meantime, we got housekeeping. Okay, we got some announcements here. Remember, if you have any announcements that you would like to make, we are nationwide, so we do not discriminate. Actually, we are international. So if you have stuff that you would like to share with us from all over the world, more than welcome to send it our way. We will not have a problem actually announcing it and letting you know about it. So Abington Police Athletic League in Pennsylvania is looking for volunteers. It's a great program. They are affiliated with the International PAL Athletic League, where police officers and mentors work with kids after school in athletic programs. So if you're interested in volunteering, David Rondinelli, 267-536-1074. We will have this information up on the website later on. So, yeah, or you can Google them. You can Google them at Abington PAL program, and then you can get the information there. Also, we got a flyer from Citizens and Police Together Run and Ride. It's a benefit for the DARE program, also co-sponsored by the Abington Police Department. It's going to be Sunday, September 22nd of this year. It is going to be held at the BFW Post 676 Jenkintown Road in Glenside, Pennsylvania. They're going to have a motorcycle ride that will start at 10:30 and a 5K and 1 mile walk. 5K run in a 1 mile walk. Registration starts at 7:30. The run starts at 8:30, $20, and you get to run through the beautiful city of Glenside. You're also encouraged to register for the forms. You can actually call the Abington Police Department for information or Google them as well. One more, Toys for Tots, 10th annual Toys for Tots training. As most of you know, Toys for Tots is one of my favorite organizations, and it's also one of the organizations that the Sarah Joy Foundation has decided to take under their wing as well. We're going to be doing a toy drive this year. So if you're interested, hit me up, let me know. You can make a donation or on PayPal. Go to www.sarahsjoyfoundation.com. There is a button there for donations, and you can put that as for Toys for Tots. Make sure you put your name, and we'll make sure that we let them know it's coming from you. Anyway, 10th Annual Toys for Tots Train, Saturday, November 23rd. Great event for the kids. This is also going to be in the Abington, PA area. They're also going to have vendor spaces, so if you make things or sell things, you're more than welcome to also hit them up. That is being sponsored by the Mark Carver Train Show in Abington, PA. You can also Google that as well. That's also going to be held at the BFW Post 676 in Glenside, PA. We also have, oh, one more. The 9th Annual American First Car Show, Operation Warrior Relief, another one of my organizations, Sunday, October 6th from 12 to 4. Classic cars, hot rods, antiques, muscle cars. That is going to be held. Hold on. Oh, BFW Post 676. They're kicking butt with their nonprofit support in this community. Also coming up, you all know, it's the Sarah Joy Foundation first inaugural 5K run. That is going to be held on September 15th at 10 a.m. in Media, Pennsylvania, Ridley Creek State Park. I know some of you are not going to be able to physically attend, but we're actually also doing a virtual runner program. So for a $25 tax-deductible donation, go to our website, Sarah Joy Foundation. You can make a $25 tax-deductible donation to sponsor a virtual runner. When you do that, you'll also be submitted for the raffles, and you will be in the running for some really great prizes that we're going to be giving out the day of the event. If you are in the area, please come on down, because on top of the fact that it's a 5K run, it's a 5K walk, we're having a fun run for the kids, and then afterwards there's going to be a family volunteer appreciation day for everybody that has been behind us all of the long since Sarah passed away and since we started this foundation. So we're going to have free food, sodas, and activities for the kids. So come on down. With that said, I want to let you know, as some of you know, actually, let me back up a little bit. Next week on our segment, we are going to have three really cool guests. We're going to have Darlene Loof, which is close to our heart. She is our Queen Ambassador, our very first Queen Ambassador for the Sarah Joy Foundation. And this past weekend, if some of you don't realize Darlene's story, you're going to hear more about it next week. But Darlene is a cancer survivor. That's kind of how I came into contact with her, and our organization chose her to be our first ambassador. But this past weekend, this amazing woman did her first pageant ever and wound up coming in as first runner-up in the Tri-State pageant, on top of the fact that she won several awards. I won't tell you right now which ones, but go to Facebook, Darlene Lou fan page, friend her, fan her, and then you can get more information. But next week, you're going to hear more about her. You're going to love her. Julie Kinchuk, one of my favorites, the unofficial queen of scat. She is amazing. She's a singer, mom of these amazing twins. We're going to get to hear some of her new songs, and she's going to talk to us, let us know what she has been up to lately. As some of you might know, she was one of our first guests on the show way back in 2010, shortly after we started. So she was an amazing guest back then, and we really love to have her back. And a new guest we're going to have is Tim Ryan. Now, Tim, as you guys remember, we had the amazing Adam Doss on the show last week, and he talked about the project that he did called Date Night. And, Tim Ryan is actually the creative genius behind it. He's the director and the writer of this project. So we felt it was kind of cool to have him on the show to give us some of the behind the scenes of what happened. They were in a 48-hour film project, which is some of you might not know. It's really stressful. You have literally, when they say 48 hours, you have 48 hours to go from, okay, here is your subject matter. Here, there's three requirements. They give you the subject or the theme, the genre of the film. There's a prop that needs to be used, a line that needs to be used, and I think a word that needs to be used, something like that. Anyway, those are the three requirements. And then they have to write the script, film it, edit it, get it all done and submit it, a final project within those 48 hours or they lose points and get disqualified. So, yeah, Tim's going to be on the show. I'm really excited for that. Another announcement that we have is the fact that, as you know, that our great Shelly Nunchucks, love her. She is actually going to be holding it down as part of our Diamond in the Rough family. She has her own segment. She's going to be on Wednesday nights from 9 to 11 and Sundays from 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And with Shelly, you never know what that girl's going to be up to. She'll either have some incredible guests like Jay Giannone, some international stunt person or local filmmaker, or who knows, or you might just get her. And honestly, I got to tell you, I've never met anybody more entertaining than Shelly. Some of the stuff she comes up with is hysterical. As some of you know, she has done stand-up routine in the past, and she's just a funny person, so do not miss that. And also, to let you guys know, we are always looking for submissions. So if you know of an independent artist that would like to have their music put into our rotation or even be a guest on our show, please have them email us. Ordinary Woman, WMN is the spelling for woman, at Gmail. I would require, though, that they do send me a photograph, bio, and links to their work, and then we can see if it's something that we can have on the show, and we'd love to have them. Not only musicians, we're always looking for all types of people. Thus the thing, Extraordinary. We are looking for writers, athletes, filmmakers, actors, you name it. As a matter of fact, I am trying to track down this one person that I just cannot wait to have on the show. She's a female Houdini. She is actually a magician illusionist, and I'm just psyched to be able to have her on the show. That's going to be coming up in a few months, so I'm excited for that. Basically, that is it for, I think, our housekeeping. Now, of course, I don't want to keep the ever-creative Seth Chitwood waiting, so we're going to have him come on the show. Hey, Seth, are you there?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Mr. Chitwood, how's it going?
Good, good. It's been a long night. A lot of stuff's been happening already, but life of a creator.
Oh, I'm telling you, it's been that kind of day. It was so funny. I have a friend on Facebook, Nancy. She's a riot. Some of you might know her. She's an amazing ballet dancer, but she's so funny. She says to me, it's like the universe kind of let loose their gremlins, and they're just kind of running around rampant, creating havoc, because it's been that kind of day, honestly. So I'm glad that we actually got you here.
I saw your Facebook. Huh? You were having a bad day, so I hope it got better. I hope it got better now.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. No, I had a vent. I really did. It was funny because one of my friends was like, what happened? Did somebody hack your account? Because, you know, I usually don't post anything negative, but it was one of these things. If I don't vent, I'm seriously going to start drawing a body count. Because it was like, and it's funny because it really wasn't like I can't really pinpoint, you know, like it was some horrific event that happened. It was just accumulation of a lot of really annoying, ignorant, negative things going on. And I'm like, really? Not going to let it bother me. I have Seth on the show and all his amazing crew, so I'm not going to let that get in my way at all.
Right.
Hold on one quick second. I am going to actually reach over and get some questions that I have here for you guys, especially for you, Seth, because you're just fascinating. I love you. I mean, for some of you listeners that don't know, Seth is an amazing person. Like, he has already done a bazillion projects, and not only that, it's his work ethic and his follow through. But we're going to back it up a little bit. So, Seth, I have to ask you, how did you originally get started in filmmaking?
Well, I think it started, you know, I started doing documentaries back when I was in 2005, when I was like 13 years old. I would do like little mini interviews. Well, in 2005, I was like, I think I was 15, but I would, like, do little films around the house, and I would use my dad's, like, really old camcorder to, like, do little videos with my sister and a few friends. And, you know, my dad, he did a lot of work with, you know, Save the Bay, and he would do these little mini, like, 3 or 4 minute, like, documentaries with, like, you know, stuff with The Swim or eelgrass transplants. And so I kind of went into that field of, like, doing these little documentaries, and I did a documentary about school stress and getting over fear of spiders, and then I just started to kind of, you know, after the documentary, it's kind of, I started doing some, telling people, you know, do this, I'm going to give you a few lines, say that in front of the camera, and it just evolved into all of this, I think, over time.
Now, one of the questions that I have to ask you, because you're talking about doing this at 15, and I mean, I've seen kids do that. I know, like, my kids, I remember when they were younger, they decided they were going to do some crazy movie where they were dressed up as cops and running around, and then they were going to do the unsolved mysteries and scare the bejeebies out of themselves doing that, and never did it again. But, I mean, and this is something that for young kids to do, it was easy for them. It was stop and go. They didn't do any editing, no special graphics or any of that. Now, you have this amazing person. You're 15 years old. You're doing this. Now, you go from there to, let's say, your second web series, let's say Red Circles, where now you see the growth that you've done. I have to ask you, how did you get that work ethic or that passion for it? Because, like I said, when you're that young, I mean, you just told us you were 15 in 2005. You're like a ripe old 22 right now. So you've done more in your short career span from 15 to 22 than most people will do in their whole lifetime because they just don't have the follow through. Where do you think that drive and that passion comes from?
Well, I owe most of it to my parents. My parents definitely, you know, they made me work really hard. They're hardworking people themselves. My interest, you know, in the whole television field stems from them because they both were television critics. They worked at the Providence Journal. They had a column called On Tonight where they would review television shows, and I'd get all the pilots of either failed or upcoming TV shows, and they'd kind of tell me all the goods and bads about TV, and they were writers themselves. So I think that they had this, like, work ethic that was, like, you know, really, really working hard and not giving up and, you know, following through with everything that you do. And so I think definitely from them, I owe them everything because they kind of pushed me to get stuff done and not, you know, leave things and not follow through with what I wanted to do. But I just, you know, I really wanted to tell a story, and you know, you can ask anyone, especially my parents, my family, but I, you know, when I was a kid, I had these really wild imaginations where, and I'll tell you, like, exclusively, a little secret of mine, but and it's going to sound really strange. You might think, like, very weird things about me. But, I used to go outside. This is so strange. I can't believe I'm even saying this, but I used to go outside and, like, when I was, like, younger, like, probably, like, 12, 13, yesterday. No, just kidding. And I would, like, talk to myself and tell stories and just, like, have these, like, long, like, storytelling. It was just me, like, sitting outside on a beautiful day, like, just telling stories to myself and from all these different adventures, from journeys and monsters and people within their lives and wars and all these kind of things. And then one day I just was like, you know what, I'm done talking to myself and telling these stories to myself. I want to share these stories with people. And I think that's where it kind of all stemmed from.
You know, it's funny you say that because I think a lot of creative people do that because I'm not a filmmaker per se. I'm more of a writer in my own mind. So I know that process that you're talking about because there's been situations where I will literally see something or someone and then this whole character or storyline just forms in my head. And I have caught myself talking to myself, like the dialogue that the character would say or that kind of thing. So it's not as weird as you think, for the creative minds.
Yeah.
I mean, the quote-unquote normal people will be like, all right, there he goes, he's talking to himself again.
Yeah.
Now, I have to tell you, too, the fact that you credit your parents with their work ethic, but your parents took it a step further. Because not only did by example, did they give you this amazing work ethic, but also further to the point that they basically have given you the run of their house when it comes to filming. Now, can you shed a little light on that, I mean, because, you know, like I said, as a parent to do that.
I think that I would not have gotten to where I am right now if it wasn't for their unbelievable support. I mean, they have given me, like, to a point that there's, like, 25 people in my house running around bloody and, you know, freaking out and screaming and firing guns. And you know, they've just, you know, let it happen. And they've, you know, if it wasn't for them and their, like, undying support to let me go out and do this and, you know, just completely, you know, to a point that my dad, he's filming World First Director, you know, There was one night a few weeks ago, we were filming a scene, my dad's filming, my mom's holding a light. You know, it was just unbelievable. It was like both my parents are just like literally behind the camera with me and kind of pushing me along. And you know, they put up with a lot, but, you know, they keep doing it. And they open up the house for filming, and they just are so supportive. They watch every episode. They give me all the notes. They give me all of their critiques. And, you know, my dad and I will have these long conversations and let me vent to them. You know, they're the best psychologists for me when I'm having some problems with some actors. They'll let me vent to them, and that's great too. And so, you know, aside from what they taught me as far as working hard, I don't think I would have got to where I am without their support. And I'm very, very grateful that they really have put so much on the line for me and let me just take over their lives with all these projects, and have really put their faith in me that I had and let me
you
do
know,
what
that,
I want to
do. That says a lot. It says a lot because, you know, when you have someone like yourself, which is such a creative mind and have so many ideas going through your head, to be able to manifest them in real life and have the support of your parents, it's really huge. Because, I mean, I've been in your house and you've had the 25 people running around. As a matter of fact, some of our listeners might not even know, I've actually done a simulated training where Seth has had, you know, 12 people, 14 people in the backyard running around with fake guns and wrestling each other and doing drills, military drills and that kind of thing. So it does take a lot of faith in a child or a grown man, should I say, from a parent's perspective to allow them to make the dream a reality, which not a lot of people have. I mean, it's really great that you got have that and you're able to manifest so much in such a short time. Now, I want to talk a little bit about, so what was your very first project that you felt was the one that introduced you to the world?
No. Very first project that introduced. Well, I definitely think Red Circles was a really big highlight for me. You know, I had done a web series, my first web series prior to it called The Dreamer. It was a 13-episode series with a bunch of, you know, high school kids and friends doing this kind of weird, bizarre kind of show, which was an okay show, but it wasn't like at the caliber that I am right now, obviously, because it was the first thing I'd ever done. But it was like the perfect test and for me to be like, can I actually do this? Can I actually do series like this? And, you know, that paved way for Red Circles, and where we, you know, we started off with the whole 30-year-olds being played by 20-year-olds and, you know, kids playing adults kind of thing. And then we kind of, over the second, third season, we kind of like morphed into, oh, actually adults will actually do projects for unpaid work and will put in their time and passion to make things happen. And now it's come to like 40-year-olds playing 40-year-olds and 60-year-olds playing 60-year-olds you know, getting to that more professional level. But, you know, Red Circles is definitely a breakthrough. You know, I met a lot of people, made a lot of connections, and I think that that is what paved ways for World Worst Director, Family Problems, and now Lungs.
Now, one of the things is that I feel as an actress myself, and when you said you made a very good point that you didn't realize that you would have adults or seasoned actors willing to, okay, say, work for no money and, you know, drive long distances to be there. But one of the things that I found as an actress is the fact that if what you're being given is quality, like the script is quality, then you're going to get people to actually want to be in your productions. But I think in your case, on top of the fact that you have creative scripts that are funny or suspenseful or confusing in a good way, one of the things that I think stands out with you is your work ethic, because I'm not going to lie, I've been working as an actress full-time since 2008 when I stopped being a criminal justice instructor, and I've worked on a lot of projects that were great projects, but I haven't seen them because they never got done, or the funding fell through, or there's a lot of reasons why it didn't happen. Yet that's not the case with you, because I think it's kind of word of mouth that gets out, where I, as an actress, if I work with you and you follow through and you finish the project and I get to see it and I can make copies of it, I'm definitely going to be word of mouth of, oh, Seth's having an audition, definitely calm down. What do you think, you talked about your parents, obviously, good example. What do you think has been the driving force for you personally now to be able to juggle all the projects? Because you talked about Red Circles, which we're going to talk a little bit more when we have some of the actresses come on. You also have World's Worst Director, which is another web series. Then you have Family Problems, which is a different type of web series for you. It's very dark and mysterious and very serious. I mean, I think it's very different from Red Circles. And then, of course, you have the new one coming out soon, Lungs. What do you think has made you be able to have that follow through, and how do you juggle all these projects, all these people at the same time?
Well, how I juggle it, I still don't know to this day. I don't know how it happens. I never sleep, so that's one way of it. I still don't know, because everyone always is like, how do you do four web series? And I'm like, you know, if you figure it out, tell me, because I'd like to know. Because it happens. But, you know, having an imagination like I do, it's great because you get to create some amazing work and you get to write some amazing stories, but it's a little bit of a curse at the same time, because you keep coming up with these really great ideas, and it just, instead of waiting, you just want to do it. And I think that's where four web series stem from, because I'm in the middle of writing Red Circles, I'm in the middle of writing World's Worst Director, and I go, oh my God, I have this really cool idea about a family that buries a body in the woods, and now they're going to try and deal with that. And boom, Family Problems is born. So, and having people that are like, oh, I, when Red Circles came to about season two, and I found out there were actors, like adults, and that wanted to come and be professional and wanted to make a part of their career and wanted to work with me, and I see the pool of people that were lining up at the door to come and do this, you know, to me, I was like, well, you know, if I have the people that want to do it and I have this group of actors that are dedicated, like, why not? And that's been one of the drives to wanting to do more and more work and write roles for people and tell more and more stories. For me, the end goal is I really want to write for television. I really want to be in Hollywood or New York writing television shows, being a creator. And I'm hoping, you know, I don't know if it's a naive thought, but I'm hoping someone will watch Lungs or Family Problems and go, wow, this guy can write, and ask me to write a show for them. And especially with the way the web series are moving, you know, I just finished watching House of Cards, a Netflix original show. You know, that's a web series that's on Netflix. I mean, and people are tuning in. You know, House of Cards got nominated for 9 Emmy Awards. So, you know, is Netflix going to be the place that watches some of my work and goes, let's bring him on to write a 13-episode show for Netflix original series? Who knows? But, you know, I've been doing these kind of more, I don't want to go in off on a tangent because we have all these guests coming on, you know, I'm finding that my web series that I write, there are two kinds of web series, and I'm writing on I'm writing a different kind of web series. So norm web series that are out in California and that are much more popular there are these 5-6 minute web series that have a very basic storyline, or even sometimes, not to insult my web series friend, but, or have like long storylines, but they're only kind of be like 10 episodes, 6 minutes, very basic kind of 2-3 scenes an episode, and, you know, one major twist plot at the end. And then, you know, week by week it comes out, or sometimes it comes out every month. And, you know, I'm actually kind of, you know, writing 20-minute long episodes, 15-minute long episodes that have these arcs through each episode and feature several scenes and feature a cast of 65 people. And so I feel like I'm writing more for a television level, where some web series are just for the web, and I'm writing something that, you know, could be on television tomorrow, not to be like biased or like to my own horn, but I mean, you know what I mean. But
no, it's true, because the fact is that, you know, you do that, and the fact is that I personally, you know, stand back, as I said, my forte originally was being a writer, because that's what I liked. That was my passion. So for me to have the advantage where, because I've done some consulting on your projects and worked on a couple of them, to read the scripts and to see where you're juggling four individual shows that have absolutely nothing to do with each other. The characters are different, the scenarios, the everything. Lord, even the time zones are different. Yet there's no loss in quality of character development, dialogue, or the actual storyline. That is huge, talent-wise. And I see why you would never, you know, you wouldn't be picked up anywhere because of your talent. And I think, honestly, for people like you and for anybody that's worked on a web series, House of Cards, I think, was the wall that needed to be knocked down. Because up to this point, everybody's like, oh, you're on the web, whatever. They never took it serious, yet we got to see entries in these individual LA web series that you guys got nominated for and a few more. The quality of the work that I saw on these web series was mind-boggling. I mean, I thought it was, some of them were better than any of the, not to be biased, but some of the shows that are on television nowadays, good Lord, better than those shows. So I really believe that for people out there that do work on web series, that I really do think, like you said, House of Cards being nominated was definitely one of the final hurdles where people are beginning to realize, look, the internet is a huge market and there's a lot of talent out there. And it's just, I think it's just going to totally change the face of how people view series in general, as far as that is concerned. Now, I have a question for you. How did you ever come up with the concept of Red Circles?
A lot of stuff that I come up with, some of my ideas stem from dreams. And I actually have a little journal next to my bed. I'll wake up, you know, in the middle of the night or early in the morning after having intense, strange, like sometimes nice and comprehensible, like dreams. Comprehensible, sorry, that was me pronouncing a word wrong. dreams. And so I actually had a dream. It was over like a few like weeks of kept having a similar dream of coming into my house with all the lights turned off and not knowing where my parents were and hearing the shower going and just... like, because your dream, like, you don't just, like, run in the other direction. You just have to go to where the sound is in your dream. Going up to this dark bathroom and finding this woman with her clothes on, covered in blood in my shower, and screaming and screaming. And then I would wake up, like, crying. And I said, you know, if I don't want to have these dreams anymore, so why don't I, you know, write something and get this out. And so I started writing, okay, why is this girl in the shower? Why is she covered in blood? What's happened? Where is everybody in the house? And you know, it's filmed in my house, which is, so like literally that first scene that you see in the series is like almost mirroring the dreams that I was having with this woman. You know, it just stemmed into four seasons of utter chaos, paranormal mystery, and darkness, and death, and blood, and that's what's happened, all from a little dream, all that from a little nightmare.
That's amazing. Now, listeners, if you have not checked out Red Circles, you definitely have to go check it out. I put the link to the Facebook page for Red Circles. Go over there and check it out, and definitely check out the episodes. Now, you've had how many in the Red Circles?
We've had 33 episodes, three seasons total, and we're in our fourth and final season, 14 episodes this season. And, I'm very happy. I'm happy. It's bittersweet, but I'm happy to be done with the show. It's run its course, and I'm very happy at how it's ending. And, you know, it's I can't say anything about the ending, but you know the ending, and you know it's a little mind-blowing. But
yes.
I'm happy to be done with the show. It's sad because it was the first show that kind of – when it made its way into these other three shows, I'm happy.
Yeah, it's an amazing show, and for me, I remember the way I met Seth was I went to an audition. It was a casting call, and it was an audition, and that's how we wound up meeting. And I went in there, and I'm like, okay, this kid doesn't even have a driver's license yet, because he looks so young. Wait, what do you mean he's the director? Like one of my kids. But then actually, I remember you emailing me and asking me if I would be interested in doing this. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm new to this. Let's try it out. So went down there, filmed, and I'm like, yeah, I'll be lucky if I ever see any of this. But you blew my mind away with the fact, one, your work ethic, and two, the fact that, yeah, when you said the show was coming out, it came out. I got notified of it, got to see it. And for me to go back and check the shows that you had done prior, the website alone kind of blew me off. If you guys haven't had a chance, go to the Red Circles website. It's because, again, you get into this website and the quality of it is so professional. And he has all the past episodes and bios on the actors and their pictures and behind the scenes. And like I said, I've seen productions that had a huge budget, you know, compared to what most indie projects have, and they didn't have half of that. So that in itself was very impressive to me. And then the people you surrounded yourself with. I'm going to take 1 second because I want to actually bring in one of the best actresses, Mary Ferrara. And I love Mary because she is a chameleon of acting. I mean, very rarely do you run into an actor that can do all genres very well. And Mary, I have to say, is one of those actresses that just blows your mind because you have her where she's this demented character in Red Circles, and then she goes and then she's this hysterically funny character in World's Worst Director, and then some other stuff in between. It just blows your mind. So I'm going to invite Mary on. Hey, Mary.
Hello.
My
face
hon,
is
how
bright,
are you?
Bright red right now. No, thank you for the compliment, and thank you for the Red Circles website. I did that. It took up a whole summer. But,
that's the thing that I love about Angelwood films is the fact that Seth, you, and this is a question that you both can answer for me. Seth, how have you managed to surround yourself with such amazing, talented people that just complement everything that you do?
Well, I wouldn't say everybody. No, I'm just kidding.
Come on, yeah, everybody has to have that.
Pheromones.
I have to say, Charlie, I have to say that I think you hit the nail on the head, if that's the expression. When you said that, you know, people come to the set, they see the professionalism, they see the writing, they see that we've actually released all these episodes and there's stuff out there, and they can actually play a role that will be seen by however many people watch the show. And I think that's what gets people to stay and want to work hard and want to have passion and put on a good performance. And yes, we've had some issues here and there with people, and we've had some problems, but, you know, at the end of the day, I think everybody's really happy to be on the show and be doing on all four of the shows and working really hard, because I think that they want to be on a set that they like and admire and just be the talented that it is.
Yeah, it's amazing to me because, like I said, it's just the fact that you show up, and I've seen where most of your actors are off-book, character-created 90% of the time. And, you know, you're getting these intense scenes done. Like, I know that we filmed some scenes where we were in, you know, that warehouse that we were at. I mean, that was a long day, but we got so many scenes done because everybody was just good to go, and it wasn't the most comfortable shoot. There's people on the floor. Poor Paul was on the steel table with something digging in his back. You know, it's just the fact that these people are willing to do what needs to be done to create an amazing project. Now, Mary, I have a question for you. How did you and Seth wind up working together?
How did we find a little angel came out of the sky? No, that was one of my dreams. I saw a listing on newingandfilm.com for Red Circles. And I remember auditioning for a theater out in Burlington, Mass, and then driving from there to Barrington, and went in there and read, and I believe Willow was there reading with me.
Yeah, Willow.
I think. Yeah, and I read for Sarah and Emma Waters, I believe, and I think he contacted me about playing Roberta Jackson, Hunter's mother. And then he's like, no, I'm mapping out season 2. I have another character for you and Gloria Jackson. I think that would be better. So that's how that happened.
But young Roberta, she's not Paul Kandarian's mother. She was for, like, the younger Hunter. Because obviously
the younger
Paul Kandarian's mom, that would be really weird.
Now, for someone that has never watched Red Circles, can you tell them, like, a little bit of what it's about and what it entails?
About me? Do you want me to explain Red Circles?
Sure. We'll do it.
Sure.
You know it.
If somebody's never watched Red Circles, Oh, goodness. Well, Seth could probably better explain, but it's sort of like a murder pattern that keeps happening. It's sort of this surrealistic world, you know, it's like a pattern where I think a young boy is found dead and his mother is either dead or bloodied in a shower. And it's kind of this mm-hmm. pattern that keeps happening. And this young female detective walks in this house and discovers a murder that matches this pattern. And she's also like, wait a minute, I've been here before. I've seen this kind mm-hmm. of thing before. And she realizes, like, 20 years ago, she was with her father who was investigating a murder pattern just like that in the same house.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, right. So it's sort of like it keeps happening. And there's, you know, this major figure, Hunter Jackson, that's behind a lot of this. And I play his sister, or half-sister, who's a bit demented, too. And
just a little bit.
Just a little bit in cahoots together. And so it's basically just a lot of detectives and agents out there trying to figure out what's going on and putting everything together. And so it's a very good show. I always feel like even in episodes I'm not in, I get riveted. doesn't mean that I have to be in it, but I mean I watch all the episodes, and even my mother's watched it, and they're like, oh my god, I couldn't take my eyes off this because it has a lot of twists and turns. Yeah,
it does. And I remember that when Seth sent me the link, and actually it was the funniest part was this, and I remember telling Seth this story that I was watching. I'm like, all right, let me watch one episode. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning when I read the email. I'm like, all right, I'm going to watch one just to get a feel. Man, I was there until I watched all of them. And then my husband's there sitting with me. And he goes, what happens next? I'm like, I don't know. And then I'm like, wait, yeah. I have the scripts. We can read what happens next. So it was that kind of thing where that it kept my interest. And some of you that know me, I can lose focus real quickly on shows that are not there for me. You know, you've got to hook me somehow.
I'm the same way. Yeah.
Right. There was something there that hooked me where it's like there was just this dark confusion going on, and I wanted to find out more. Now, Mary, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get into film and acting?
Oh, goodness. You know, it's funny. Growing up, I think it was always in me. In fact, I had a memory of when I was 5, and I think I used to fantasize that every day of my life was an episode of a sitcom. And I had a theme. I had a theme song.
That.
I had a theme mm-hmm. song. I went to the tune of Downtown by Petula Clark. I used to fantasize. What is
I'm too young to understand this. I'm too young.
Yeah. Well, I know. Am I giving away my age? I don't know. But, yeah, it was always kind of in me. I always wanted to perform, but I was always very shy growing up. And my older brother was really everybody thought was going to be the performer and the actor. And he actually did a little acting. And then he got into my dad's company, and it just kind of, that took up a lot of his time. And I just, you know, I don't know. I just didn't really think seriously about it until I actually took a class. And it was mm-hmm. like, oh, this just opened up things in me, and I felt like, wow, where have you been all my life, you know? And
that's awesome.
I started doing improv and sketch comedy, and what would happen is there would be people in my troupes that did films, and they'd be like, oh, you know, you play great mothers. Want to play a mother in my mm-hmm. film? And so I kind of evolved doing other people. So I didn't wake up one day saying I'm going to do film. It just kind of evolved by meeting people who did film. And so it kind of evolved from there. So
I'm going to ask you, because you're two different characters that you do in mm-hmm. different, you know, Angelwood films. You have Gloria Jackson in World's Worst, in Red Circles, and then you
right.
have Katie in World's Worst Director, which are like mm-hmm. polar opposites, personality and everything. What did you do to create Gloria Jackson in Red Circles, to go outside of yourself to create that character?
Well, first of all, I try to make her also look different than Katie. Like, she's more business casual, a little more put together, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of thought of her as sort of like somebody that really wants to fit in, even though she doesn't. She's somebody that killed her mother at a young age. Kind of something big to hold in your shoulders, but there was a part of her as she got older that wanted to sort of redeem herself and live a normal life. So I kind of wanted her to seem normal, to not look like she could work in your office, you know, and sort of have like a bit of a, you know, when we meet her, she tries to convey that she is just like everybody else and had a bad childhood and stuff like that. We learn that eventually those bad things just creep their way out, and just it's because I guess her brother is someone she looks up to. He's a bad person, and he's the only one that has been there for her. So that kind of brings her back to the dark side, because in the end, that's the person that was always there for her to begin with. And even though she tries to fit in the end, it's, you know, those demons come out. So I wanted her to kind of just look like, you know, just, I don't know, kind of put together, not somebody that you would think twice at she walked by you in a store, you know.
That's kind of the effect you got, because in the earlier episodes, I know when I was first watching it, you're like, oh, okay, whatever. You know, they showed your character, and she was very mild. And like you said, nondescript was what you come across as
right at
the beginning. And then later in the seasons, when you see your dark side evolve, you're like, well, did not see that coming kind of thing, because it's just an evolve, you know, it's a total, almost like a split personality kind of thing. Now, going to World's Worst Director, which I put the link up on the chat if you guys are interested in checking that out, go check them out and fan them on Facebook. Real quick, though, if any of our guests have a question for either Seth or Mary or any of the guests that are going to be coming up, the call-in number is 347-989-1473. 347-989-1473. Or if it's a long-distance phone call for you, you can call our toll-free line, 877-907-7217. Again, 877-907-7217. Those numbers are also on a segment page. If you go to blogtalkradio.com / Ordinary Woman, WMN, that is the segment page. You can also listen to us there live and yeah, and join us in the chat room as well. So now, Mary, how did you do that turnaround and now created Katie for World's Worst Director?
I don't know. When I initially started the show, I kind of thought of her as a little bit of an artsy type, that she was a writer. So I don't know. I just wanted her to look a little harried looking. She puts her hair up. She's trying to look professional with a scarf, and that just sort of stuck. And you know, sort of a little more of the Harry type, a little more overtly frustrated. Just wants to get things done and organized, but faces obstacles, and so she's not as sort of evenly keeled as Gloria comes off. She's got a lot. She's got to deal with somebody that may call her, God knows, 4 or 5 in the morning for something. You know, and it's because, you know, but this ultimately, I think, is something she wants to do, because she ultimately, I think, wants to work in TV. As she says in the first episode, I know that when he becomes that award-winning director that he'll have taken me with him, and I'll have dumped his ass and started my own show. So wondering why she puts up with it is because there's that gold, pot of gold at the end of the rainbow that she keeps,
It's funny because people might not realize, not to interrupt you, but World's Worst Director is the format that it's set up in. And Seth, I have a question for you. How did you come up with the concept? Because, and explain to a little bit to our listeners the vibe and the feel that you're going for in the show and how you filmed it, the style that it's filmed in.
Well, it's mockumentary form, which is like, you know, it's supposed to be a documentary. Like, you're watching a show that's being taped, like it could be on television, like, and just these people's lives that these cameras have gone into. And the story itself, you know, the whole concept came from my life. All the stories that happened in the show, believe it or not, are true. Things that have happened. I came to a point where I was tired of you know, I when this is all over, I'll write a book about all the experiences that I've had, or do some sort of lecture to people and tell them, you know, the stories that I've heard, from crazy auditions to people, you know, being ridiculous on set, or the stuff that I get in emails, or people think that I'm so stupid that they can just say this and I don't realize that what's really going on. You know, I was talking to something about it, said, hey, you know, I'm a writer, let's write a show about it and tell people. And it's been such a great platform, because every time something goes wrong, or an actor is canceled, or I have a big drama thing, I'm like, well, you know, it's just more writing for World's Worst Director. It's just more story for the show. So,
I'm telling you.
Yeah,
it is.
I think
so
that's what turns on a lot of people with the show, because a lot of them are late, especially people in our field. I'll get a lot of messages from people saying, oh, my God, this totally reminds me of how this happened on my set. I was just so true to the industry, and they really like it. So, and I just wanted to say, by the way, before there's anything, is I wanted to congratulate Mary, because she was nominated for a Motif Award for Best Actress and World's Worst Director, and she goes on Monday to find out if she wins or not. So congratulations
to her. It's nice. But, you know,
it's
nice to be nominated.
Well deserved. I also put up the link to Mary's fan page on Facebook. You guys need to go check her out. Looking all hot on that cover. I love the photograph you have up there. But, I mean, well-deserved nomination, and I'm hoping that you win, because, like I said, to see you in the creative process, and a lot of people don't realize that with World's Worst Director, I got the opportunity to work on a couple of the episodes, and one of the things that I love is the creative process where, okay, the script is written one way, and then it's like, hey, what if we do this, and what if we do that, and then to see you just go with it. I know one particular scene, the very first episode that I worked on World's Worst, where Jackie, I was playing Jackie the reporter, you know, you change things up, and it's just like your facial expressions, that alone goes with me, because the facial expressions you make in the show.
You know what's funny? People commented after the first episode came out, people commented on that, and I actually wasn't aware that I did that. It's just, I'm not even aware half the time of what my face does.
And the funny thing, no, it's funny because your facial expressions kill me. And you have this, well, Katie, quote unquote, has this trademark thing where she go, and you know, it's like, it just brings all these emotion, because I'd be like, if I worked for Moses, the character that's the director, I would have killed him a million years ago and gone to jail. So, yeah, it's just like, we feel what you're going through in that creation. And real quick, for Seth, before I bring our next guest on, and Mary, I hope you hang around with us, because I'd love to have you interject on this. Seth, one of the things that gets me is, like, you crack me up because you're always like, I'm not an actor, yet you create this freaking obnoxiously sweet kind of director, character, mad genius that we want to kill, but we want to hug all at the same time. How did you create that? I mean, it's
793.
It's me, you know. Well, I was going to say originally, and it was the same thing for Mary as well, is, you know, when we started. Back to your thing about improv, I was just going to say that it's the only show of the four, that, you know, we can do whatever we want, and we can just kind of write a script at the same time, kind of go off. And that's what I love about this show, you know, when you're writing killing and blood and horror and violent all day long, to be able to then write some funny humor, World's Worst Directors, it's such a relief for me. But, you know, both Mary and I, and for some of the characters in the show, like Mary was originally cast to play Penny, and at the very last minute she was, changed and played Katie. And for me, we originally had someone cast to play Moses. I wasn't going to play Moses. I had cast somebody else. And
really? I didn't know that.
And a week before the show, you know, and it was someone like, you know, it's going to be one guy leading the show if you don't want to do the show anymore, which is true for almost all the leads in all my productions, is, you know, if you don't want to do the show anymore, the show's kind of over, because I write these central characters where, you know, if they don't want to do the show or something goes wrong, you know, and I'm not one of those people that's like, and the role of Charlie will now be played by blah, blah, blah. I don't do that. So the guy that we had originally cast to play Moses, you know, he wasn't doing kind of what I wanted, and I didn't really like it, and he said he didn't want to do to the end, and he would only do a few episodes, and then I was like, you know, it was the first person I've actually said, like, thank you, but see you later, and as we were looking for somebody else, you know, I have a good friend, January, who helps me write some of the episodes, they're like, you should just do this, You know, you should just find somebody.
Absolutely.
You should just do it. And so I kind of, it was the first time kind of stepping back into the acting kind of world and playing the role. And it's me, but like times 10. I'm not this horrible, horrible person as Moses is. But it's a little of me. It's a little bit of like, I don't know. There's a little bit of like Woody Allen in there. There's like a little bit of like Severus Snape in there.
Seth, I honestly can't see anybody else playing that character because you do it so well. Like, there's such, like, in, you know, the last episode of the season just played. Was it the last week or the week before?
Like 2-3 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And the vibe that you bring to this character is the fact that half of the time, like I said, you as the viewer want to just slap you and say, stop being so melodramatic or, you know, messed up or whatever. But then you turn around, your facial expression is, like, different from Mary's, because Mary's just, there's a certain thing about her facial expressions that just make you want to crack up. Or in the case of Red Circles, in that character, you're, like, totally afraid of this woman because you're like, whoa, she will snap and kill you in 2.5. But in your case, there's just this vulnerable undertone that you bring to your character where no matter how horrific you're being to someone, you still bring it back to this is a kind of like a kind human being in there somewhere and just doesn't know how to get it out. Now, is that something that's intentional or is that just part of how you just go with the character because you wrote him and it's so intimate for you?
It's a little bit of both, I think. You know, I wanted to write a character that was based on me but wasn't me, but also, you know, had a heart but had to have a rough skin. You know, I've always said that to really make it in this career, in this industry, you need to have a rough skin. And because you're going to deal with the drama, you're going to deal with crappy people, you're going to deal with insults and critiques and criticisms and good stuff and bad stuff and people stabbing you in the back every second they have or helping you or not false stuff or stepping on you the way to the top. I can go on and on and on. But so you need to kind of develop a rough skin and know how to navigate yourself by still staying true to yourself. And I think Moses, that was like such a great lesson, was that Moses has been through the ringer and he has built up such a rough skin that he's almost completely lost what he was first known to be, and there's a little bit of love in there, but at the same time, he has to have this large defense and security system to make it through. And you know, this is these past seasons for as a writer, I've been trying to also, you know, slowly crack that with Moses. And by the end, season 3, I think will be our last season. But by the end of season 3, you know, his kind of defense mechanism will kind of go down, and we'll see like the true Moses behind the walls. But
And I love the fact that you're already creating cracks where the audience can actually see some of that cracking through. I want to bring our next guest on, the amazing Rosemary Pacheco. Love this lady. She is actually the actress that plays Detective Gretchen Lewis. She has a very impressive resume. One of her other talents is she's co-host of Motif Magazine's Take Two, and she's also a writer for that magazine. So I'm going to bring her on now so if you two can hang in there. We'd love to have her on.
Can I say that Steph's also...
Hey, Rosemary.
Hi.
Hey, girl. What's up?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. Mary, you were just making a quick comment.
I just wanted to say, because you mentioned Motif, and I just wanted to remind that Steph's up for a bunch of awards, too, for both Family Problems and Red Circles.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to discuss that because that's one of the things that has blown my mind about Seth and the creative team that he's created for himself. But Rosemary, I want to ask you, how did you wind up working with Seth and winding up on Red Circles?
I ended up with Seth because he met me through a short film that he was doing, and I played a couple of late in that short film. It was loads of fun. I think it was Woman 20 and 30 and The Women of Harry. It was a comedic, funny. And I met him throughout doing that. And then he approached me about doing Red Circles as playing Detective Lewis. And, you know, I see myself as the befuddled detective who is always saying, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Have you gone nuts? I seem to say that a lot, but I think, you know, based on the story, it is an interesting one, and it's got that supernatural twist to it. So there is a lot of, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. But I met him through doing the short film, Women of Harry.
Now, Women of Harry, I know, Seth, had you submitted that to a film festival?
Yes, but it did not get into the festival, but whatever.
because the reason I'm asking is because I know that a lot of film festivals have these strict rules that the movie can't be, like, I don't know, shown on the internet or whatever, or broadcast, but I got the opportunity to work on this, and I have to honestly tell the listeners, watching these women create this wide array of characters on this short film, I had to cover my mouth from laughing out loud because it was so funny. It was cracking me up, and when I saw you, Rosemary, I think that was the first time I met you. At that, it was just hysterical. You had this look like, I'm like, I would not mess with her. She will F me up big time.
I thought she was actually a lesbian. I was like, you know, she shows up in this hat, her hair's covered up, she's in this, like, manly costume, and I had seen her pictures online, and I was like, who is this woman? Like, is this Rosemary Pacino? Like, I know some people send headshots, they're like, don't look them at, like them at all, but this woman, like, she doesn't look like her headshot at all. Like,
yeah. Oh, man. That is something you're going to have to write into World's Director, because I found in the industry that is something that casting directors, I guess, run into a lot, where they will, you know, get a headshot, and then they wind up bringing the actor or actress in for an audition, and they look nothing like what the headshot did. So that was the same impression I had. I'm like, I Googled her, and yeah, that's not what she looked like.
Nope. I came in dressed as the manly lesbian. No makeup and a fedora and a lumberjack shirt and a brown, I don't know, some sort of brown vest I was wearing and some, you know, some cargo pants and some, I think, boots. Like some sort of Doc Martens or something. I don't know what I was wearing.
Yeah.
I just totally changed my entire, you know, way that I look for that part to be the lesbian. And that's, it was hilarious.
And then, you know, she's up. So then she goes to change to be like the next role in this more woman kind of look, like nice hair, lipstick, makeup. And like she, I don't know why, how she did it, but she just decides to go into my bedroom to, like, use my mirror. And I go upstairs to grab, like, some camera equipment, and there she is. And I'm like, who are you? What are you doing here? And she's like, I'm Rosemary. We just shot, like, a few minutes ago. And I'm like, what?
It was hilarious. That's so funny. He was saying, where is Rosemary? Oh, that was me in the lumberjack. Yes.
Oh, man, it was so funny, and the look of total confusion on Seth's face was priceless. So he's like, wait, what? Huh? Wait, no, that's not you.
It was fun.
I'm so glad the film, like, it happened, because I had to do it for a class. That's where it kind of stemmed from, and I said to myself, do you think I could actually do a film with 45 women? Like, could this actually happen? And, you know, and I challenged myself to do it, and it happened.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, and the thing that gets me is when you have a film that brings, like you said, these different women in, and some of the women are like playing two different characters at the same time. But the funny thing is that I'm sitting there watching all the women come in character, and honestly, there isn't one character that is anywhere similar to the other.
Right.
And that's a tribute. Well, you know, because a lot of that it's the ability of the actresses to take the line, because you know that you can take a line and it can be said anyway.
Right.
And again, I have to ask Seth, how do you know that someone's going to be a fit for you, and how do you get them? I mean, the caliber of talent. Let's get to that. The caliber of talent did you wind up picking for your projects? Is there, like, how do you get to that? How do you just know that that's the one?
I I just do. I know that's a really bad answer, but, you know, Women of Fairy was kind of a casting call in disguise, and I got to meet these. Well, I got to meet all these women, and some of them I had never worked with that came and had the chance. They had one line to prove they could, you know, do the role, do the character, work with me as a director, and listen to me, and if they were going to be a good fit. Rosemary was amongst several women that came that night that impressed me, and I said, I'm going to go write them a role, or I have this role for them. And, you know, now she's in Red Circles. You know, another girl who did Role for Respect was Jenna McGowan, and later on she went on to do Role for Respect with us this season. So there were some people there, that, and there are still people I have yet to use that really impressed me that night. But, you know, I think there's this, it's a part of the creative mind is just knowing, like, who works, and I, you know, I meet people that I know right away, like who they could play, or I want to write them a role that, you know, I really want them to play, or I have this role that I think they can really pull off. And 9 out of 10 times, I'm usually right. So it's been great so far.
No, and it is. It's amazing to me because, like I said, as a writer and being someone that absolutely loves the film industry, it just blows my mind that you have such incredible talent surrounding you. Rosemary, how did you wind up getting into acting?
I did it, many years ago when I went to school in Chicago. Long story short, went to college there, was in art school, and did a few things here and there. Was on a couple of union sets and did some things with, many moons ago, a movie called Vice Versa with Judge Reinhold. I don't know if anybody here remembers that, but that is a funny movie from way '80s. There was another movie called Native Son, which was an Oprah movie. I just had a little tiny little smidgy role in that, and it was fun, though, to learn all about movies and see how they're made on a Chicago street in the middle of winter. and from there, but then I came back, you know, I moved back here. And when I moved, I thought I would never, ever be involved in acting or film again because I thought, well, what's in Rhode Island? And then it just, I went back to school. I finished my degree. I had a degree, but I went back for a certification at URI. And while I was there, I met one of my teachers was the director of the Rhode Island Film Collaborative at the time, and that was Michael Ryan, who now owns Motif Magazine. And by the way, I just want to mention, Seth is up for many awards on Monday night, because that is where we're having the awards Monday night, August 26th. And I will be emceeing that event with another mine who does take two with me. But Seth is up for a lot of awards, so that'll be a lot of fun. But
I want to say Angel Pictures is up for 11 nominations for their 3 projects.
Yeah.
You know, That's mind-boggling, because I know the people listening are like, okay, very successful, you know, Angelwood Films, you know, 11 nominations. But I have to reiterate the fact that the creative mind behind all of this is 22 years old. It's just mind-boggling to me. And the other thing that I wanted to bring up for us more seasoned actresses is the fact that, two things I want to bring up. One, Seth, when he does the casting, the one thing that really impresses me is you don't do the typical, okay, let me get a 22-year-old actress that's size 000, you know, certain, you know, big boobs, blonde hair, that kind of thing. You really look for life characters, people that would be real, what they would really look like. And the fact that you have actors and actresses that are older, what would be considered, you know, way older by Hollywood standards, yet these people come to your projects and absolutely rock their parts. And that's a testament to you and what you're doing. But my thing is, and maybe Rosemary can pipe in on this one, Rosemary, what do you think it is about Seth and the way he conducts himself that makes people that are old, you know, old enough to be their older sister, respect him and listen to him and follow direction on set?
I think it's the writing, because he has a lot of really cool ideas, and people see that. And there's another thing, too. I think even before the writing, I think people see that Well, first of all, he has collaborated with a lot of other writers and filmmakers, too, who are very good, and they see that about him, because I know, because I've talked about those people as well, that Seth knows quite well also. But the thing that I wanted to say, I think people see the drive and the kick to the work is impressive. So you don't just have a person just sitting there going, you know, I'm going to write these things and I'm going to cast them, we're going to shoot them. He's really very, very serious and committed to pushing forward and this career for himself, you know, in this industry. And I see that happening relatively soon.
Oh, absolutely.
I see it happening relatively soon because he's just very committed to the whole thing. So I think people catch
I totally
up,
agree.
And honestly, what actor does not want to be involved with someone who is writing things that they find funny, sad, interesting, and who doesn't want to be involved with someone they think is going to be successful? You want to be on that. You want to be with that. And the creative forces, they're really impressive. So I think that's the main
thing. And the thing
reason.
Is, too, yeah, it is amazing,
yeah.
And I think it goes both ways because as an actress, for me, the fact that someone with Seth's work ethic and eye for talent and talent in general to actually say, sure, I want you to be a part of that, it also is a kind of like testament to the actor themselves that, oh, wow, okay, maybe I'm not as horrific as an actor as I thought, or maybe there really is some talent there because this person obviously saw it. And like you said, it's someone that you know is going to go somewhere. You know, it was funny, Seth, because you earlier said hopefully somebody will see this. I doubt very seriously you're going to be anywhere near Rhode Island in 10 years from now unless you choose to have a home office there. But the reality is it's like you see the talent. I mean, I'm sure if we go back to when Steven Spielberg or Christopher Nolan or Guy Ritchie were in there in the age that you are now, we would see some of the same qualities in the work ethic and stuff because you just know it's there. It's short of you deciding tomorrow to never do anything again, it's just inevitable that it's going to happen. Now, Mary, I have a question for you because you've taken it a little further with Seth in the fact that not only are you acting in his films, but you're also helping behind the scenes. What do you think has had you commit to that, and why do you feel so strongly about working with Seth?
I mean, like behind the scenes, about doing the websites and
the websites, and I know you've also been like a PA on a couple of his projects and that kind of
thing. Yeah, I like doing these things because I mean I love film and theater and the arts, and I like doing it and being a part of it in any which way I can. The websites, you know, I partly it was for portfolio purposes because I didn't have a lot in my portfolios for design. I had coded websites for years, so doing things like Red Circles and World's Worst Director just kind of looked good for me to show people. And it's kind of, you know, it's fun, you know, I have my creative license and stuff like that. But I like, you know, and I've also helped direct a bit for World's Worst Director, and that's fun, too. It's sort of like you get to sort of, it's almost like you get to pose people and do it this way, and, you know, it's sort of, it's you know, I just because I like different areas of things, too. I took some film classes in college, so I always had an appreciation for film. And I took them, I just thought they were easy A's, to be honest with you. I took a film video class, a screenwriting class. I had no inkling of ever going into this, never knew I'd ever go into this. But I remember enjoying it. And somewhere out there, there's a group, there's a film that I did with classmates of me acting really, 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 really badly. And I don't know where it is. So this one I had, like, no interest in it, and somebody has it somewhere. Because I just was, like, it was just more about doing this film for the class and not, you know.
Right.
But anyway, yeah. So, I mean, back then I used to write a lot as a kid, too. I used to write stories a lot. My mother says that she used to think I was going to be a writer growing up because I used to write stories that she would read me to bed. And
right.
So
that's
I've
awesome.
Always... Yeah, and I used to be an artist, and I've always been kind of a creative person,
right.
And I like to So I like to do different things, and I like to help people who are in those things, too. I mean, I love being – the creative process just is a great thing, and it keeps me feeling young because, you know, it keeps me kind of rejuvenated in some ways to be part of something that's growing and being connected to somebody who's constantly creating and growing and doing things. I like being a part of that because that makes me feel sort of – useful and rejuvenated and young.
You know, it's funny you say that because I noticed that with creative people is that I live a lot of facets. I mean, there's parts where, you know, it's the business person, this and that. But for me, every time that you're absolutely right, if you're in a creative environment, and I know because I've had some really long days where, you know, we've gone and I've filmed in Rhode Island and I have a long commute to get there and stuff, but there's always that sense of reinvigoration and just recharge and just feeling so amazing being around all these creative minds. And you're right. It does just totally reinvent and kind of like remotivates you to what you're passionate about. And speaking of that, I want to let our next guest on, so if y'all hang in there, I want to introduce the amazing Vicki Lynch. She actually plays Jennifer Grady on Seth's newest brainchild that he's already – you already did one season of it, Seth?
One season, yep.
One season in the bag.
Okay. Nominated for 6 Motif Awards on Monday, so –
here right here is the testament to your not only your work ethic, but your growing as a filmmaker and as a director and editor and all combined, because every show you've done has some kind of nomination behind it to validate it. And Family Problems, I think I'm going to have to be partial to this one because it's your latest project. It's only been one season yet. It's so riveting that it's 6 nominations is nothing to look down at. And the fact that we won't even discuss what Lungs is going to look like because we haven't seen that yet, but just that in itself says how much you're continuing to grow as a director and as creative mind. So I'm going to let Vicki Lynch come in. She's Jennifer Grady on Family Problems.
Hello.
Hey, Vicki, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Vicki, I have a question. How did you wind up working with Seth?
My school nurse, actually, at my high school, is an actress on the side. And last summer, she was like, hey, I have this friend, Seth, who's a filmmaker, and I've done work with him before. Would you be interested in auditioning? So I said, sure. I'd never done film before. I've always been a theater actress. So I went down to Rhode Island, auditioned, and about a week or two later, Seth called me and said, we really liked your reading for Jennifer. Do you want to come back and play her? So I said, sure.
And mind you that nurse that she's talking about is Teresa Chason, who plays Molly, the leading actress.
Oh, yeah.
Family Problems. And what would happen
and it goes
was...
back. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, we had done a test pilot. It was the first series that we had actually done a whole test episode to make sure this was going to be a success and this was going to work. And we hadn't cast Jennifer yet. And I said, I really want someone who's dedicated and someone that's really great for that role because it's a very important role for the series, obviously. And I want someone who's going to be dedicated and someone that's going to be great. And Teresa gave me 3 names, but he was one of them, and said, these 3 must come down to audition for you. They will do really well. And Vicki really impressed me and she got the role.
Thank you.
See, and it goes to what we were saying earlier about the word of mouth, where you are such a creative force and you follow through on everything, that of course people are going to say, we need to work with this guy, to audition for this guy. So, Vicki, I need to ask you, what did you do to prepare for creating the character of Jennifer for Family Problems?
It's different with this web series because it is played in 3 different parts, like 3 different times, I guess. So to prepare to play a 10-year-old was much easier for me, I guess, because I was like, oh, I've been 10. I know how a 10-year-old acts.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just kind of came from experience. Then playing 18-year-old Jennifer was easy for me because I am 18. So I kind of tried to take experiences in a sense, like, I have a very loving family, so it's the complete opposite, as you know, of my Jennifer family. But I try to take experience of, like, how do I feel when I'm really angry at my mom? Like, when she does something that makes me so mad, like, how do I feel when I do that? So I try to take that and take my real life experience and bring that into Jennifer's character. When it comes to playing 30-year-old Jennifer, I just think of the way people, like, older people act around me. And, the, like, the maturity level of that as opposed to the maturity level of the 18-year-old and the maturity level of the 10-year-old. But the material part of it, I don't know if there really is a way to prepare for that besides reading the script and really just getting into character when it comes time to film.
Now, it's something that is a testament to the talent that Seth has surrounded himself with, because here you have someone, you're 18 years old, and you are, like you said, okay, I've been 10, I can go back there and channel that, but you haven't been 30, so here you are. And if you see the evolvement of your character, it's amazing to see how it's the same person, but not the same person, because you've been able to create that. Now, I have to ask you, because film is so different from stage, was there any challenges that you came across when you were trying to act for film as opposed to being a stage actress?
I wouldn't necessarily say that it was challenging, but the biggest difference obviously would be that with theater you only have that one opportunity, whereas in film you can film as many times as you want, you can mess up as many times as you want. So I would really say it wasn't, like, necessarily a difficulty. It was just different. It was just much different than theater acting.
Right. Now, where do you – now, I'm looking here at some of the projects that you've done. You did Legally Blonde. You did Grease, Bye Bye Birdie. So have you ever played a character that is as troubled or as complex as the character Jennifer?
I've never played a character like Jennifer. Most of the roles I play are, like, the sweet, young, you know, like, pretty little girl, like Elle Woods, or I was Peggy Sawyer in 42nd Street. So it was always, like, the almost innocent, naive young girl, whereas Jennifer is just the complete and total opposite. Thinks she knows the world, you know, tries to act older than she is. Rebellious. I've never played a character like Jennifer, no.
Right. For our listeners and those in the chat room, I just put a link to the YouTube trailer for Family Problems if you want to take a look at that. Seth, you as a director, what do you feel were some of the things that you needed to do to be able to guide Vicky into creating the character of Jennifer? Or is that something she kind of just ran with and knew what to do?
You know, I wanted to say about the ages, it's been the biggest challenge, I think, for all the actors in the show, is that we decided to do this in three different time periods, 1995, 2012, and 2044. And I did not want to have three different actors playing different roles. I didn't want to have an actress playing 30-year-old Molly, 50-year-old Molly, and 80-year-old Molly. I wanted to cast actors that could play all three ages. And I knew that was going to be the biggest challenge, especially for the kids that were playing, that the 18-year-old kids were coming in and playing, you know, 30 and then 10, as kind of Vicky explained. I think, you know, Vicky and I, we had a few times where we were able to really sit down and talk about the roles. I think right before we go filming, I will mention lines to her. Like, I think the other day I said, you know, why I wrote this line, or what was it? It was a quote from Wizard of Oz that you had no idea what it was. But I was like, she had to say, oh, what a world. And I was like, do you know what that means? And she didn't really get the reference. And but for the most part, like, you know, she's come in with a great character. I really like working with Vicky a lot. And I actually got to work with her in a different role as well in a new film that we just did called Margaret. You know, Vicky has a really great work ethic as well, is that she, you know, comes in and can, I don't know, there are some actors that I work with, Mary is a really great example, that, you know, will read my scripts, will read my writing, will look at me as a director, I can say a few things, and they just get it. And Vicky's also kind of one of them, that they just, you know, run with it, and it's just so great, because they just read my mind, or they just kind of understand what's going on. I don't need that extra kind of push. Charlie's like that too. Not to insult her. Rosemary's like that too. No, everyone's like that. Never mind. No,
that's funny because you know you're talking about an 18-year-old girl that is, you know, woman that's coming in here and creating this really complex 30-year-old character. For you, how do you create the chemistry between the characters that you're playing, and the people that are playing your parents? And the complexity of relationships.
Well, it's funny because Molly Soloway, Teresa Chazon, I'm actually very close with her in real life. She's
mm-hmm.
like a second mother to me. And, you know, it's one of those things where we'll kiss each other goodbye and we'll say, I love you, when we get off the phone. So to try to completely flip that role, to act like I hate her, not even hate, like despise her, and it was difficult in a sense, but it was almost so easy because we have that love for each other, that it was
mm-hmm.
like, I know you're acting, you know I'm acting, so let's just do it, and let's just do it to the like our the full potential. Let's just go for it. I think our chemistry in real life made that easy almost.
I think you're right because, not to interrupt you, Seth, but just real quick, one of the things I noticed when I'm watching the web series is that there is that underlying tone because the character of Jennifer could totally go to the other extreme where you're like, whoa, psycho. But you have that even when you're spazzing out on her and you have these really intense scenes, there's still that something that you know there's still an emotional connection you have to her. As much as you want everybody to know that you hate her and can't stand her, there's still that part of you that can't help feeling something for her in a mother-daughter kind of way. And like I said, that's something that's so incredibly complex for an 18-year-old to be able to create. And what were you going to say about that?
Well, I was going to say two things really quickly was that, you know, I think the relationship that Vicky and Teresa have is just so great that they're able to, you know, be very happy, you know, she practically calls her Mama T, and, you know, they have very great friends, whereas as we just shot a scene, like, literally on Sunday where Vicky smacked her in the face, like, 12 times, like, legit, like,
mm-hmm.
hit her as hard as she possibly could. And, you know, or Teresa hit her on during filming of season one. Like, they're able to do that, and then at the end of it, give each other a big hug and a kiss and walk out the door and be smiley and happy, and then be able to just throw everything at each other. And that's been the best thing about Family Problems, especially, is that everybody comes to our sets and with these 16-hour days and just puts in, like, 150%. They bring these characters. They're pretty good on the lines. They're ready to go, and they want to just bring their A game to challenge each other. And that's the best thing about the set, and especially with the detectives. You know, Natasha Tolsky, who plays Detective Elliot, she just had a phenomenal scene where she with John Smello, who plays the chief, where they were just yelling and screaming at each other because, you know, they both want to challenge each other to do really well. And that's what I love about this cast is that they want to put in 100% not only for themselves but for their scene partner. And that's what Vicky and Teresa does. And I just wanted to say also about Vicky is, you know, she's very mature for her age. And when she came into the audition
mm-hmm.
and what I had heard from Teresa, I knew that. So, yes, she's 18, but she also has a much older kind of personality to her. And she's
mm-hmm.
very mature. And I think that that's a little bit of Jennifer. Jennifer was very mature for her age. You know, she in some of the episodes, she said she knew what she wanted to do. She wanted to take control. She didn't listen to authority. And I think that, in a way, Vicky kind of brought that with that character, because of just her own kind of personality and her kind of own behavior. Not to say that she's like crazy murderous like Jennifer, but you know, that's just who she is. And I think that was really great in how she brought that to the character as well.
And it's true because you can see that. You can totally see that scenes because I know watching the show, there is a maturity level that even in the scenes where you are playing an 18-year-old, you forget that you're 18 because of everything that's going on in the dynamics of the family, and obviously you've had to grow up very quickly. But by the same time, when you're playing 10-year-old, there is a innocence there as well. So you were able to channel that part, which is an indication, like you said earlier, that your family life is so different, and it's evident because you're able to channel that in the younger version of you. Now, Jennifer, what do you think you...
Vicky.
I'm sorry, Vicky. I'm thinking Jennifer. Vicky, What do you think you've been able to get from Jennifer that you're going to be able to take with you that has just touched you in a way that is going to be something that you're going to carry with you for the rest of your life? Because honestly, at 18, and this is like the first time you play such a deep, complex, dark character, what do you think is going to stick with you for the rest of your life?
I would say like the number one thing would be how not to be, I guess. And like
right.
I said, you know, I'm close with my family, so it's hard to see something just that's the complete opposite. But also, I guess to just, it's going to sound kind of weird talking about Jennifer, but just kind of stay true to yourself, because she knows what she wants, which I guess is a typical woman thing, you know what you want. And Jennifer is kind of like the go-getter, like she's not going to let people get in her way of what she wants. And so if I'm going to take something away from Jennifer, that would be it, is, you know, don't let people stand in my way of what I'm trying to achieve, or, you know.
Oh, absolutely. That's a great thing for you to be able to come away with. Now, Seth, going back to family problems, what was the I know you're funny because you say a lot of this stuff came to you in dreams, but what was the inspiration for this? For this particular show?
Well, it wasn't a dream. You know, I had just thought for a long time I really wanted to do a mystery. I really like to do like mystery kind of shows, but I wanted to do something that was real. Originally it was going to be a very small, intimate cast, and it was originally just going to be in the present until it kind of expanded into this past, present, future kind of stuff. But I wanted to do something about coping and how a family or a group of people cope with something so terrible, or how they get over something so tragic. And I kind of, at the same time, having this problem and this kind of conflict in a family of not knowing what the secret is and who is true and who is telling lies. And so I thought it was perfect to do a show about a family that buries a body in the woods, and we don't even know, as the audience, and the family doesn't even know who was the murderer. And if it's someone in the family or outside of the family, and then how this family decides, you know, we have no choice but to bury this body, and now we need to move on, and how they cope with this kind of traumatic moment.
And I think that's the twist to this particular series, that there are shows out there where, okay, someone killed somebody and we cover it up. In this particular case, like you said, the audience does not know who killed this person. And at this point, most of the family or the actual people in the show don't know who killed this character. This person, they just know that, okay, we need to hide this body and move on. And like you said, I think that is what makes it so suspenseful, because when you know who killed the person, then you know who to look out for, when even if you're covering up for them because you care for them or for whatever reason. But when you don't know who did it, then there's that added stress and tension of looking at everybody around the dinner table, like this person could be a murderer. And still trying to say, pass the potatoes and what did you do at school today? Because that's one of the scenes that I found very powerful, where, you know, this family is trying to live an illusion of normality and having this conversation. And, Vicky, this is where your character loses it. Can you explain a little bit about that scene for us?
We actually just finished filming this scene the other day, but I think it's, I don't even really know how to explain it. What it was to me is the whole, I don't know how to explain it without giving too much away. You're talking about the dinner scene when they're talking about, like, what Missy did at school today and all that stuff, right?
Yes.
Well, I don't really come in yet. So I don't want to give too much away.
Yeah, I tell her just to keep her mouth shut. No, you have to kind of watch the show. But I think the best thing about the show, the narrative about it is, and that makes it different from all the others, because you have shows like The Killing and you have shows like Top of the Lake and stuff like that about a murder or a missing girl. And I think the best thing about the show is that it's told in these three different stories, past, present, and future, and that it's all kind of connected. I think also I wanted to say, and I don't know if it's because it's like a bunch of method actors in my cast or whatever, but, you know, I don't know if you know this, Charlie, but you know, everybody in the cast, including Vicky and Teresa and all these kind of people, they chose not to know who the murderer was. And everybody knows now because we just filmed the big scene where the murderer was kind of revealed. But for a whole season and a half, no one in the cast knew. It was very, very hush-hush. And other people in the cast have secrets, too, that have yet to be revealed, and we're keeping them hush-hush from people. So, you know, everybody has been, like, getting the script and opening up the pages and be like, oh, my God, I didn't know you were this person, or oh, my God, I didn't know that you did that. And it's been kind of really funny to get emails from the cast and being like, oh, my God, I had no idea. So it's been, like, it's been fun.
I think it adds a lot to it.
Yes, I was just going to say that I think that the one thing I could say about this scene is that as the actress, like as Vicky, reading that scene and watching that scene in season one was used motivation for Jennifer, because that is her main driving force, is that Molly has this amazing life, this new family and everything. So that scene I used as motivation to pursue. Like, I could say that about that scene.
Yeah. No, but it's true, because you can see that. You can see the underlying tension in that. And I just think, and it's funny you say about method actors, because one of the films that's well known is, I think it was Flight 23, when the director filmed that movie. The actors playing the passengers, because the movie's based on some of the events from 9/11, the actors that got hired to play the passengers did not meet the actors hired to play the terrorists till they started filming. And during the whole course of the film, they were not allowed to congregate or get to know each other on a social level. They were just kept segregated. And it shows. It shows. And in this show as well, it shows that, I don't know, the method actor technique is amazing, because when you don't know who did it, I don't know, you can tell that the person really doesn't know. Or you're like, wow, that's a great actor. Look, they really act like they don't know, but they have no clue. And I think that really adds to it. I'm going to bring in Ellen, because Ellen is the actress that's going to be Sari, is it? Is that how you pronounce it, Seth?
Sari.
She's going to be playing Sari in the upcoming web series. So I'm going to have her on. You guys all hold on, because I want to keep you on here, because I love the fact that we can interact on this. We'll bring Ellen on. Hey, Miss Ellen.
How are you?
Ellen? Hi,
yes,
how are you? How's it going?
I'm good. How are
you?
You?
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show. So we're going to go right into this, because first of all, I want to know, how did you wind up working with Seth?
You have the party lines.
Know, right?
Remember the old party lines?
Party line. And Vicky's saying, what? Party who? Where? What's that? Party bus? I'm there. So, Ellen, how did you wind up working with Seth?
I love it.
How did you wind up? So how did you wind up auditioning for him or working with him?
I had met Seth auditioning for another project, and I had found out about lungs, and he was kind enough to let me audition actually a couple days after the auditions really were taking place, because I was working on something else at the time. It was great. I had known of Seth's work, and I knew of his reputation. So I was very anxious to be able to do something, some kind of a project with him, whatever that would be. So I was very happy to get the chance to audition.
See, Seth, there you go. The reputation's your reputation precedes you, I guess, and that's a good thing. So for listeners,
I just wanted to say I'm sorry to interrupt you, Carly. It started 2 years ago. You know, I begged people to come audition, and people would show up, and they wouldn't take it seriously. Now I get emails almost every day in the Angel Pictures email account being like, hi, my name is so-and-so. I've heard really great things about you. If you have auditions coming up, please let me know. Or, you know, I'd love to do background with you. I'd love to work with you. And it's just been great to see all those emails and all those people that just really want to come and have the chance. So.
And
Ellen
true,
was
and
one
I've
of those,
that.
And I got to work with her very briefly on World Worst Rector, and she played a very small role, and I really did like Ellen a lot, and I really wanted to find her a role, and I originally didn't see her for Sari, but she came in and she impressed the hell out of me, and and I'm really excited to be working with her right now. So.
Thank you. I feel the same.
Now, Ellen, what was your background? How did you wind up getting into acting?
Well, the show is almost over, so we can't get into that much, Charlie. So I'll do the brief one. But anyway, mm-hmm. I've, you know, been kind of an actress since I was 4 years old. Something I've always wanted to do. But life and other commitments took me kind of away from it. And then I decided, you know what, I want to do it again. So took some formal classes, which I've been doing for a while now. And just working hard, going to New York when I can, doing things obviously in Rhode Island, Connecticut, wherever there's an opportunity. I'm auditioning and just doing as much as I can. I love it, and I'm sure this, my fellow actresses on the line will attest to the fact that when you love it, it's not work, and you just have to pursue every opportunity you have because that's the only way to grow, get yourself known, and that's what I'm all about right now. So I'm open to just auditioning and kind of whatever range of projects I can find. I'm up for it, and I've done a little production assistant work, you know, anything to be on the set and to learn more about whether it's in front of the camera, you know, or behind it. So that's the fast version.
Now, Seth, I'm going to ask you, because Lance hasn't premiered and it's not on yet, how did you come up with the concept for this show?
Well, this is another project that I've been thinking about. Actually, it's been in development for about, believe it or not, 3 years now. It was something I thought about way back when I started doing Red Circles. I really wanted to do a show that was a little bit close to home for me, which is dealing with traumatic issues in your life, but also depression and how you overcome those kind of barriers and those kind of almost that wall that kind of symbolically comes up in your life and you're unable to kind of take down. And this trail was this kind of journey for these characters that came from very traumatic and depressing and dramatic lives, from different events, from Cerie's past and Grace, which we find out throughout the show, and how this trail is kind of a meditation and kind of a symbolic kind of journey to kind of walking, but also coming across kind of these hurdles that occur to let them kind of refine themselves, and how to kind of cope and overcome depression and to just be happy again, and how hopefully finding your way from the very beginning to the very end of this trail, which comes out during the show.
Now, my thing too for you is, again, I have to reiterate the fact you're 22 years old, and these creative projects that you come up with are so far in maturity to anything that your average 22-year-old will come up with. Yet this project, too, is different from anything else that you've done. How did you think you were able to put what you just told us into this creative venue and the way the genre of the show is?
It was definitely challenging for me. Well, first, you know, the cool thing is I've always wanted to do a show that was exterior, and 98% of the show is exterior with the exception of a few scenes that are inside. But, you know, it's challenging because it's a very hard subject, especially for the show. This is a drama. It's not a comedy. And it deals with what a lot of people deal with. And it's, you know, I dealt with it far before I started Red Circles, and I went through a point in my life where I kind of had to face that kind of depression and kind of those bad thoughts. And it took me a long time to kind of get through it. And I think that these web series have actually helped me and saved me because I've met so many great people and have been able to kind of put my mind out there and work really hard and push through. But for Lungs, it's a challenge to tell a story and have people actually be like, why should we listen to this? Why should we listen to this writer? He's not a psychologist, but, you know, tell stories that I've heard from around the bend. And some of the characters are based on people that I've met that have had stories like this. So it's been a long time of work to make it just right. I think we found our story.
Ellen, what did you do or what did you feel you had to bring to the table to create this character for Seth and for the project Lungs?
Well, you know, to piggyback on what Seth said in terms of bringing life experience, you know, very few people, I would say, if anyone, goes through life unscathed and has something in their life that affects them, whether it's a loss of some type or an emotional, you know, trauma, something like that. We all encounter that, and it may come at an early age. It may come more than once in your life, but I think we all have something we can draw upon, and myself included. So whether it's exactly the experience of the character or not, the fact that you can pull from your own experience similar feelings, at a, you know, and I think I've been able to do that, partly, again, because of my own life experience and also those of the people that I've encountered in my life as well. So it's a very powerful story and very unique, I think, in terms of what is being seen on the web. In terms of,
now,
the subject matter and so forth.
Now, my question is, and if this can go out to any of you, we all know that still mental depression and mental illness in general is so stigmatized still in the year 2013. What do you think is going to be different about this show? And Seth, you can lead off, and then Ellen, you can jump in. What do you think is so different about it that people are actually going to watch it? And what do you think they're going to come away with when they do watch it?
Well, I'll first say, and before I answer your question, I just want to say that we're doing a really great thing, and I want to mention it on your program. I hope that people are listening and are interested. But we're doing a really cool idea that we wanted to also hear other people's stories, either by anonymous or even if they wanted to state their name, about how they answer the question of overcoming depression themselves or how they face depression. And we're asking people to write in a paragraph or a small response answering that question and emailing it. And I'll give you the email for your website, but the email is lungstheseries@gmail.com. And we're having our cast members read these responses on little video posts answering the question, like I said, how did you overcome depression? And hoping that people will write in and we can. And that leads me into the answer to your question is, you know, I wanted to do a story that introduces these characters dealing with these things, but also is kind of to open up conversation and to show kind of these strategic and coping mechanisms to help people kind of get through it. And, you know, the web is a new place for people to go and watch shows and find information. And I think that was just the best way to use it as a kind of artistic platform to kind of give people and show people that you're not alone in how you feel and ways to overcome that kind of difficult thoughts and problems.
Yeah, and that's the thing, that it's bringing it out there where it's so different. It's not something where you're sitting across from a therapist or you're dealing in group. It's just your whole concept is just so different about how this character is dealing with the issues that are going through in her life. And again, like I said, it's mind-boggling for you to come up with this concept. Now, Ellen, for you, what do you think is something that people are going to be able to walk away with when they see the show?
Well, the point that you made a minute ago is important. I think that this is not a talk therapy kind of, you know, Dr. Phil, whatever. I mean, those types of shows have their place. It's more of a parable, a fable, whatever. If you think back to, you know, a lot of stories in literature, there are lessons to be learned without slamming somebody over the head with it. And I think that's what's good about this is that it's universal and it's relatable. And the folks that are in the cast are of various backgrounds and so forth, which is kind of a, you know, slice of life, as they say. So they're relatable. These are not folks that, you know, no one can relate to or never met anyone like them or not like themselves or anything like that. And it's in layman's terms, if you will. It's not on a PSA level or a medical level or anything like that. And I think that's what, again, the fact that this type of subject matter is being dealt in a web format itself, I think, is unique.
It is very unique. It really is. And I like the fact that, like you said, it's not on a medical term or anything. It's basically, and Seth, you can jump in and tell me your perspective of this. It's the fact that you're basically telling people that when you're dealing with this issue or any issue that brings you down or takes you out of your place in life, we can look around us to find ways to deal with it. Is that basically what you were trying to get across to people?
Yes, and I want to say that, you know, the show isn't just a shout at you how this is what you do to defeat depression. I mean, at the same time, there's still mystery to the show. The show, you know, you don't know who the characters are when you first meet them, which is very interesting. You're not told in the first episode why Grace is the way that she is, why Ceri is the way that she is, but through
right.
the
mm-hmm.
season and throughout the show, you find out what's behind the characters, and that's still kind of the entertainment kind of show because you see the trauma, but you don't know what exactly it is, and then when it's revealed, you're even more connected to it.
And I kind of like that because that's a little bit like real life, because when you meet someone, you really don't know their story. You're just confused with what you're seeing in the moment.
Yes, exactly. And I think that, you know, you bond with these characters. If you really follow the show, you bond and you meet these characters and you find out how you find out with them when they reveal it, their trauma and why they're the way they are. And then you watch them towards the end of the show, you know, overcome the strength or come close to it. I don't think you can be completely 100% healed. I don't think you could ever be 100% healed from depression. I think you're always going to be there. But, you know, how it gets better. That's what kind of happens throughout the show. And it's a journey for everyone. You can pick one character to follow. You can pick all the characters to follow and how they just go from their darkest days to the lighter. And it's just it's the tunnel. It's the trail. It's this dark tunnel and the light at the end of the tunnel and how they get closer and closer to the light and how hard it makes them to get there. And hopefully people will take away from that and understand and help them maybe in their own lives.
Absolutely. So we need to wrap this up because, I mean, you guys have just flown through these 2 hours. I'm going to start with Mary. Mary, people looking for you, if they're interested in any of your work, www.maryceferrera.com.
MaryCPereira.com. I'm just correcting you just so they get the URL right. MaryCFERRA.com.
And we have that in the chat room. Put that up. Also, Mary is also on Facebook. You can go live and be a fan of hers on Facebook. And what projects do you have, Mary, coming up?
Right now, I'm still filming. I have two more scenes to do for season 4 of Red Circle. What's that?
No, it was me.
I'm still filming a few more scenes for season 4 of Red Circles, and I'm in a play, August Osage County, which is opening in November, so that's going to take up a lot of my September and October with rehearsals, but it's a great role, so I'm really looking forward to that.
We start production of the third season of World's Worst Director in December.
Oh, okay.
That's awesome.
That's coming up.
There you go. That's your December. Well, thank you so much for being with us. So far,
no problem.
Know where you can find Mary and give her a hey, what's up? Thank you so much, Mary. It was fun having you.
All right,
you on
no, thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Bye, Mary.
Have a good
one. Bye.
So, Rosemary.
Yeah.
Young lady. What are you up to? What do you have coming up?
Oh, okay. Let's see. Well, filming the last few scenes for Red Circles, which I'm looking forward to. And then directly right after that, I'm in a feature called Jumping the Shark. That's with another brilliant young guy by the name of Roz Cunningham from New York originally, now in Rhode Island. And also another feature, and actually I'm a cop again in this one. It's a movie called One. And it's Raphael DeBacco's films for DeBacco Films. I'm excited about that. And there's a few things that I can't talk about just yet, but there's a few things coming up.
You're also emceeing, I guess, Monday. You're going to be emceeing Monday at the Motif Awards.
That is a very cool thing. We're going to be at FET in Providence. nightclub, and we're going to be doing the Motif Film Awards, and it's the first time ever for Motif, so this is really exciting. And hopefully I'm going to be also writing some articles for Imagine magazine in Boston, because they have asked me to write for them. So
that's awesome.
You can probably look for some articles on Seth in there, because I'll be contacting him about that. but yeah, that's in the works as well. So there's just quite a few things going on. It's all good. It's all good stuff.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show, Rosemary. Look forward
to
hearing from you again.
Yeah, thank you. It was my pleasure. Thanks so much.
All right, have a good night.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So, Vicki, what do you have in store for you in the future?
Well, everybody had these big, intricate answers. filming, we're finishing wrapping for season 2 of Family Problems, which will air November 14th. Of this year, so that's a big deal.
Right.
And for right now, nothing regarding any more filming, really, or theater. I'm thinking of actually getting back into theater, because I haven't done it besides high school.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go to art school.
Right.
I'm thinking maybe get back into some theater, but besides that, it's just work. So nothing too exciting.
I guess she'll be.
So
Her project, Margaret, is coming out in October, too, that she's in.
Excellent.
Oh, yeah,
so we'll
looking for that.
Not a problem. Vicki, thank you so much for being on the show. It was a pleasure having you. We hope to having you again in the future sometime.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Oh, anytime. And Ms. Allen, what about you? What do you have coming up?
Well, I'm going to be armed with my bug repellent, and we start filming Lungs on Monday morning on the 26th, so looking forward to that. Some intense filming for a week and a half.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ellen, but I just want to say that the cool thing about filming Lungs is we're filming on location. We're filming a whole week in New London next week, and then we're filming a whole week in Rhode Island, but we're filming in some really cool places, and I'm really excited.
Yes.
So we're filming and it's our first time ever doing a full week of 12-hour days on location, so it's going to be a lot of fun. Sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay. No, I'm very much looking forward to that, so getting plenty of rest. I did just finish a commercial, but I'm really kind of focused on this right now, Charlie, so I really have not pursued anything beyond this. I have another web series that I did that's coming out in October, debuting in October. But right now, this is really where my focus is, and after that, we'll see.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It was awesome talking to you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Talk to you later.
Okay. Take care.
Now, Seth, what do you have? Let's wrap this up good. What do you have coming out in the next
month? Well, Red Circles airs in October. Family Problems is airing November 14th. Lungs will air in the beginning of December. World's Worst Director Season 3 returns in March. I have a film called Margaret. It's a short film that's going to come out in the fall. And we have 4 more films in development right now, 2 shorts and a film I'm working on called Bad Girl about a serial killer that's going to be start productions in January. So have a lot going on, but
The ever-busy Seth Chidwood. So if you want to look him up, go to Angel Wood Films. He's also on Facebook, Red Circle on Facebook. Lungs is on Facebook, Family Problems is on Facebook, World's Worst, and like I said, Red Circles. Thank you so much for being on the show. And
I just wanted to say really quickly, I think we have like 1 minute, but I just want to say one thing I've always wanted to say from the very beginning was just for me and for any other artists out there that are working on film, it's just to do it. You know, I say that to everybody who asks me, you know, how I got to where I am. And I didn't, you know, there are a lot of people that say I'm writing something, but I'm too afraid to film it. I'm too afraid to put it out there. And I said, just do it, because, you know, that's how I grew. I started off at something, you know, you've seen my work from season 1 of Red Circle to season 3, season 4. It started off as like, okay, and it's gone to amazing stuff. So, you know, you're only going to get to where I am and going to get to your far levels unless you go out there and do it and just don't stay back or say why or make excuses. Like, you know what, just go out and do it and make things happen. And that's the best kind of way to just build your resume and be successful or whatever.
So on that note, we're going to leave it with that. That's advice. Just do it. Thank you, everybody, for listening and coming on. And Seth, thank you to you. And we're going to be leaving with the theme song for Lungs called Worse Than Death. Thank you so much, everybody, for being with us, and have an amazing evening.
Thanks.